Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. It'll be the best 45 minutes of your life, I promise. Doing the right thing since 1952.
Just around 6, shower, shave, and coffee, it's time to get that sports fix. Bring a case of the Mondays, then there's Would You Rather, just a little bit of awkward. So tune in live today, it's Dusty and Cam.
Which one's crusty and which one's dusty?
My sports package is huge now.
Where are you at, brother?
Hornswoggled, befuddled.
I'm ready to crush your dreams in the morning.
Lighten up, Cam.
You don't even have a barn.
Would have built one just for you.
You'll love your dog.
I love you.
It's time for Dusty and Cam.
We've got to bifurcate those two things.
Good morning, happy Friday to you, the 3rd of April 2020, Dusty here, Cam Cleland. Good morning, Mr. Cleland.
I'm going to start the day off with this question. What does it say about us as a country that we are enamored with this tiger guy?
What does it say
about us?
We've got...
It says that we're bored.
Hold on.
Doesn't it?
Absolutely, 100%.
Because there's been shows, and look, Buck and I took over quite a bit of time when Game of Thrones is going on, because that's natural. And all three
Wait,
of us...
Wait, why is that natural? Dragons and...
No, it's naturally...
Wizardry.
Well, because that's fantasy. We like fantasy. And then there's nostalgia, which is Stranger Things. That is nostalgia for the guy that lives in the 80s, grew up in the 80s. So that was nostalgia. I don't know what this is. Are we just the fact is that everybody's at home and we're trying to figure out and want to see the craziest train wreck you've ever seen?
It's because it's a colorful, crazy train wreck.
I
haven't watched
boredom.
It. I don't even need to watch it anymore. I know the entire story from every radio show, television, Twitter feed. I don't even need to watch it.
Yeah, I think you do, because the characters, like, no matter how people describe it, what happens when you see it is completely out of this world.
And I can't
you go,
do it.
What?
Now it's out of major protest.
That's fine.
I guess the guy's a murderer and he's in jail
and he's got
the coronavirus.
Again, he's not a murderer, nor does he have coronavirus.
These are all things that are happening.
They're not. He is in quarantine because somebody in the prison that he was in has it.
But he was in prison.
Oh, he is in prison.
But he's an alleged murderer.
Nope.
No. But he's in prison. Did he murder animals?
No. He is in prison for a
murder
for hire.
I don't even want to get it. I don't get it.
He tried to hire somebody else, but here's the thing.
So wait a minute. So
did he actually
You're a murderer
try and
if you allegedly
it.
Hired somebody to murder somebody. You're still a murderer.
Nobody died.
Okay, nobody died. All right.
Except for Carol Baskin's husband. That's the person that died. Yeah, no, nobody actually died.
Right,
it was a murder
was
for hire plot.
That's all I wanted to know is that
we're
is it,
bored?
What does it say about us as a people that this is the thing that took over?
Okay.
This guy.
Boredom and no, the fact of the matter
not
is
accepting that.
Well, hold on. It's boredom and the fact is that we always want to, like you mentioned Game of Thrones, it's fantasy. It's something that you can't fathom or comprehend. The thing that gets people so roped into this is that it has all of those elements, but it's real. And it happened. And these people are real human beings.
Is this along the same lines why we get enamored every Friday when Buck brings up Florida Man and we go, yeah. Florida Man!
And guess what?
We go, I get it. It's Florida Man.
Guess what? It all starts in Florida. And the person that Joe Exotic wants to kill lives in?
Florida.
A lot of it happens in Florida. Okay. And so it's like this idea that you get wrapped up in that whole fantasy aspect of it, but it's real.
I'm still in full protest.
That's fine.
Multiple protests.
It's not your bag, baby.
I didn't say it wasn't my bag. It just now it's become obsessive. Now I'm like, okay, I can't do it. It's like that thing that scrolls by on Netflix and it comes up, says trending, most popular, trending. And you don't want to hit it. Now it's just like, I don't want to hit the button.
I'm sure you saw this, but, you know, Joe, they're making a movie out of it. Like a real one.
Of course they are. I mean, why wouldn't they?
And this kind of sums up.
Who wants more of a tattooed meth snorting?
No, he doesn't snort it.
Cat wielding, smokes it, snorts it, whatever they do with that stuff. I don't know what they do with it.
It's got everything, and it's weird, and it's, but Joe Exotic.
And are they all flamboyants? Are they all flamboyants when I say?
What?
Well, aren't they all gay? Are they all gay men?
Flamboyants.
Well, they're flamboyants.
No, they're not.
They're not?
No. One of them is.
Which one is?
Joe Exotic. He ran for
president.
Doesn't
mean somebody else has to be?
That's part of the story.
Oh.
That's supposed to work that way.
I saw a picture of him posing with three guys. They were all tatted up, and they were all posing like they were
in that picture.
Siegfried and Roy.
You'll have to watch the documentary to find out whether they actually are.
That is one of the things. It's just
why can't you just tell me? Nobody cares. Everybody already knows.
P. & Anthony brings up a good point here. It's a reality show on People of Walmart, and it actually, Walmart is involved in it, believe it or not. This is why it's crazy. Walmart is involved in it.
Well, that's fine because Walmart is its own entity. It's its own entity. It's its own traveling sideshow. Every city you go to, I swear to God, it's the same people.
The weird thing is that Walmart plays a more prominent role than I ever would have anticipated in this thing.
I'm not going to hate on anybody that goes to Walmart, but I saw a guy that put a mask on that they did a Walmart shot of it. Mm-hmm. It might have been on
Undies.
He had his mask was an upside down thong that he was wearing in there. No, it was where I think it was on Barstool Sports. We've seen all Barstool Sports. They're the leader in sports content, but they do throw out a good WT event every now and then. And certainly enough, this guy was wearing a
WT white trash.
Yeah, he was wearing a red thong over his face as a mask.
I saw
today, and he was on a scooter.
There was a guy wearing like full on whitey tighties, Hanes undies over his face as a mask too.
Did he cut out some eye sockets there?
He's looking through the leg holes.
Now, I've seen some crazy ones that people have put full on Ziploc bags over their heads, saran wrap. You're going to die.
That's not a good idea.
You can't get oxygen.
No.
Okay.
No. That's one of those things you learn in elementary school. Never put a plastic bag on your head, kids.
No. Well,
it's weird.
Hey.
But anyways, they're making that movie about Tiger King. And this is why people...
How can they make a movie right now? Because they can't film anything anywhere.
Well, I know, but it's in the works.
Oh, it's in the works.
Before this documentary came out, the rights had already been acquired. So this is why people love Joe Exotic, though. And this is why people are infatuated with him. He has released the two people that he wishes would play him. But this is why people love Joe Exotic and gravitate towards him. He is delusional enough to honestly believe that Brad Pitt should play him in a movie.
Oh.
But at the same time, he's realistic and smart enough to know that the other person that he wants to play him in a movie is David Spade.
Oh, I was going
to
say Joe Dirt. So Joe Dirt.
He knows that he honestly believes in his mind he is Brad Pitt. But he also honestly knows he is Joe Dirt. Hmm. Like that is, and you sit there and you watch it and he bounces between this reality and delusion and everybody in the show kind of does it except for the guy who has no legs.
You sound like you love this show.
Insane clown posse prosthetic legs. Rinky, he's the most real person on that show, and he's got insane clown posse prosthetic legs. It's crazy.
I think you need to. I need you to call it and be part of this movie. You need to call. You need to be like part of the. You need like the agency.
Yeah,
just lock it down.
I'll be part of it.
All in.
It's weird though, and I think you're missing it. And I did hear, you know, speaking. You've been doing daily doubles in the workout room. I heard you defending not watching it on primetime last night. You joined the club. You're doing double duties, weightlifting and radio.
Yeah. I might have partook in a small facet during the six club hour. I might have just walked in occasionally.
I like that. You know, you just kind of stumbled in. Did you really just stumble into the show?
I stumbled into the show. Like, I had things I had to do. And so it just happened.
Wait, what
just,
were you doing down here?
You
live across the river.
Hey, you got to keep some things a little quiet around here. You share everything all the time.
All right.
Keep things quiet.
I
had to come on and defend my actions against Isaac Rupp, who says I was a cheater.
Uh-oh,
and says I was a complainer about strokes when my handicap was fair and I beat him and he didn't like it.
Oh.
So I had to defend my honor.
Wait, so you took something personally that somebody said about you?
No, I never do that. What are you talking about?
What? Okay, so what happened here? So Isaac is saying that...
No, we've come to a
golf dispute over handicap?
Right, because Isaac plays a lot of golf. Sure. I don't play a lot of golf anymore. I used to play a lot of golf, but I'm not... Right. I'm an average golfer if I'm not playing, and then I can... So my handicap, we played for some lettuce.
I think your definition of average is far different than other people's.
But anyway, I mean, the average, I would bet 10 rounds a year if I'm lucky. And that includes playing in those scramble tournaments. So that was the schedule that I was normally doing. Isaac gets, I don't know, 150 rounds a year. So we wanted to play. And I was like, yeah, man, I got free time. Surprise, I got free time now. And golf is still one of the things that keeps social distancing. We follow the rules. We don't, you know, the cups are raised. We do all the right things. And that's what we're supposed to do. We get out and walk and we keep our distance. We have our push carts. But anyway, we wanted to gamble. And I said, I need two aside, four, because my handicap was at higher and his was down to where it needed to be. And so
it was higher.
It's higher.
Yeah.
It's higher. Yeah. And I showed him my last six scores. And he goes, okay, that's fair. By the time we got done, he said, that's not fair. We're not doing that anymore. And because I beat him. And he didn't like that.
Him.
I didn't sandbag him. I just happened to. So now we're back to all square. Within two rounds of playing together, he said, no, it's done.
Okay,
we're not taking any more. None. Zero.
All right.
So I said, that's fair.
You worked it all out.
I said, I worked it all out.
Good.
He doesn't like it when you get in his wallet. He does not.
Well, do you?
You know, if I'm willing to gamble and I get out there and I don't play well, I'm not going to hate on that. I just get to take it up for the next challenge.
Do you
ever play with the guy that when you're done, he kind of goes, oh, I don't have any cash. You have Venmo? No. Do you have Zelle? How about PayPal? I'm like, oh, crap. You can't hide anymore. There's always ways to pay.
There's
the guy that never brings cash to the course. Oh, we'll settle up next time. No.
Yeah. And that's the guy
now.
That you go.
You're not invited back.
If you don't have any of those things, you definitely still have checks. So write me a damn check.
The guy who at the bar is in the situation where, you know, you get the first round, I'll get the next one. And then
the next round never comes.
Yeah, never comes.
I know that guy really well.
Takes off early or then someone else actually gets the next round. It's the guy who always gets off the hook for paying for the round.
Yeah. Yeah. Buying a round is a great thing. For people. It engages everybody around
Unless
you.
It's the whole bar and you made a hole in one. Then get a little spendy.
Yeah, I mean.
I know what the rules say. If I ever get a hole in one, I'm not doing that.
You're running off the course?
I'm not paying for everyone to drink. Oh. I'll pay for me to drink.
So the rule.
They should pay for me to drink.
The kind of subjective rule is you pay for your foursome. But if you go into the bar, whoever's sitting in the bar at the time, you're supposed to buy a round for those people that are sitting in the bar. However, I've been in situations where you got to lay your credit card down and it's open for the day. And that makes me
not even want to get a hole in one.
But it's only one. It makes you not. Yeah.
Open for the day?
Open for the day.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I know it's a little risky.
That's
a little
ridiculous.
But you're there to celebrate.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm with Buck. I'd rather not get a hole in one if that's the way you have to go. You know, the guy that's terrible though is the guy who's in there and then he's drinking like well, and then he comes in, oh, hole in one. Then they go top shelf for their for the drink that you're buying.
Yeah.
Well, hey, buddy.
No, like, more Jack. Sorry.
I don't mind it if you upgrade. If you go up one shelf. Don't you skip three shelves and go from the well?
No, you put
all
a parameter. You put a parameter on it.
You
really
doing? 12-year small batch barrel aged.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, is that Pappy Van Winkle up there? Let me get a little bit of that.
Hey, don't lie that you're not guilty. That if somebody made a hole in one, you'd be like, serve it up, give it to me right here. Let's go. You'd be taking
that free drink.
You'd be taking that drink like there's no tomorrow.
I'm not going top shelf though.
Yeah, I wouldn't bleed them.
I'm going.
No, I agree with that. You don't have to bleed them dry.
Thanks a lot.
But if I get into the bar, I'm going to buy everybody the round that's in the bar. I'm not going to leave it open for all the yahoos that are going to come in later.
No, absolutely not. No, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous because the yahoos, especially if they don't know you and they don't see you and you're not there.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, they're going to go wild. They're going to go wild on that card. So no way. No way that's happening. Has that happened to you?
No, it has not happened.
Okay. Well, good. Good. And is that for every hole-in-one or just your first one?
No, I think it's for every hole-in-one. Isaac has two. He has two. Mm-hmm. Son of a...
Well, he has his, which he even says is a questionable one.
Yeah, the 69-yarder. Hey, Gronk.
Par three.
He said it didn't count. I was like, no, it kind of counts.
It does.
It kind of counts.
I mean, you hit it from the tee box and in. Yeah, but, I mean, would you celebrate it if you just, like, you had a great lie right in the middle of the fairway and you chip it in from 69 yards. I mean, you're celebrating,
yeah,
but you're not.
Yeah, that's still good, but it's not a hole in one.
It's not a hole in one. Not a hole in one. All right, 55305. That is the fan text line. Tiger King and golf have already taken us way beyond where we thought we would be. When we come back, we've got a rookie debut for the ages in Major League Baseball. Going to take you back in the Wayback Machine. 617 on the fan. All right, coming up on today's show, we will have our Q&A P1 social. You've got questions, we've got answers. Send us your questions. The fan text line is 55305. We'll have our weekend Would You Rather coming up at 8 o'clock. And a public service announcement from Samuel L. Jackson. That is pretty damn good. We will have that. But right meow. We usually do our Today in Sports History in the last segment.
Do we?
This one was worth doing
because
it is a special one.
Oh. I remember it was just like yesterday.
On this date in sports history, 1989, Ken Griffey Jr. makes his debut for the Seattle Mariners and gave a glimpse of what M's fans would come accustomed to.
There's a drive into the gap in left center field and deep left center field, and Henderson's not going to get to it. It's off the base of the wall, and Griffey to second base in his first major league at bat, a ringing double off the 375 marker, and we have seen that all spring. Welcome to the show, Ken Griffey Jr.
The Mariners lost to the A's 3-2, but the kid went 1-for-3 with a double in his first at bat.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He hit that off of Dave Stewart?
No idea.
Dave Stewart? I'm almost certain it was Dave Stewart. Oakland A's.
Ron Burgundy? I don't know, but...
Because that was Dave Henderson in center field. Hendu, former Mariner at the time.
And how great is that, though?
Or maybe it was Ricky Henderson.
Ricky Henderson.
But that's right. I'm sorry. Dave Henderson was still there. Or maybe not. 89. But it wasn't too much longer that Pop joined him, and they went back-to-back.
Yeah, back-to-back Jacks. I think it wasn't that in
that
June.
That was versus the Angels.
June?
Correct, or the Orioles.
In the Kingdom.
That was not in the Kingdom. It was in Anaheim.
Oh, was?
Yes.
I thought that was in the Kingdom.
No, it was not in the Kingdom.
Oh. But that game, April 3rd, 1989. He sounds so energetic and young in that.
So good.
It would be Dave Stewart was the
Dave
pitcher.
Dave Stewart
was the pitcher in that game, and he ended up getting the win.
I like those unis. I like that little blue, little gray. I hate the teal.
Why do you hate teal?
It was so 90s.
Are you okay?
It's like everybody had teal in the 90s. It's bad. It was really, really bad.
It's gross.
So good to hear Dave Niehaus's voice. And then you have guys like, and this is the thing that I miss about baseball is that you have these moments where there's these highly touted guys that always come up every year. There's one guy that everybody's touted, and you hear this buzz surrounding them and they're hyped up. But every now and again, you get a generational talent, and that buzz is so much that you can't ignore it. And Ken Griffey Jr. was one of those guys, you know, in years past, we've had guys like when Trout was coming up, Harper, Juan Soto, when these guys come up and they finally get to the bigs, you go, oh my gosh. And the first at bat, they give you something like that.
When's the last time we've had that kind of debut where somebody that you just grabs the camera? Especially in baseball, I know it's probably going to be Bryce Harper.
Well, you know, unfortunately,
if you think about it, but it gets just the, everything he did was so effortless. Like, he looks like he's not trying. He wasn't this big muscle-bound mutant out there with arms popping out. He wasn't 6'7 Aaron Judge, 6'8 Aaron Judge, this mountain of a man out there. Might be Aaron Judge a little, but Aaron Judge was even spent some time in the minors.
And that's the thing, is that in modern-day baseball, they hold these guys down so they can keep them for that extra contract year.
Yeah. It might be Juan Soto, because Juan Soto was 19.
Juan Soto is one. Ronald Acuña was one too, where he came out and he had a homer in two of his first three games or whatever it was. And he had hits in all of his first, I'm looking it up right now.
But it's
four
effortless.
Of his first five games, of his first six games, he had Acuña had hits, and in four of those games, he had multi-hit games.
But Junior was just silky. The way he played, just pure athleticism.
Mm-hmm. What was the last debut you remember really highly anticipating? Who's the last player that you?
It is Harper.
Wait? Was it Harper?
It's Harper the one that just you sit there and you were waiting for. Yeah, it's Harper, because all these other guys come up mid-season.
I was pretty excited for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I heard about him, and I got to see some of his stuff, and then watching his bat speed and all of that. But
But that was June? Isn't that June when we got him?
He got a late call-up.
Yeah, because they wanted to hold on to his rights for another year.
Like Chris Bryant, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So fired up for Tim Lincecum's debut with the Giants. And I remember it wasn't even that good.
It was late April.
He walked a bunch of guys, but he flew through the minors, and like the park was just buzzing that day.
They won't even do that anymore, it feels like. If you're that good of a player, they will hold you back.
Yeah.
And they don't even allow us to have the excitement of it.
The quickest rise into the game, like the guy who got drafted, then boom, almost immediately we saw him, was Steven Strasburg. Remember when he was drafted number one overall by the Nationals? And then just remember, like a couple of months later,
how long ago
he
was that?
2009, 2010, 2010,
it's
maybe
been quite some time then.
But I remember that vividly, like having to be there and watching his first game. It was an ESPN game. They put it on. And I remember me and my buddies just got together and we just watched Strasburg, because coming out of San Diego State, it was like he was the phenom. He was supposed to be the guy to take it back over. And unfortunately for him, injuries. But, you know, look at him now. He got a World Series championship out of the deal.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
This text says, what did Alex Rodriguez do when he came up? He was quite young. He was 19 as well.
He was 19. He was 93. I remember him. I still have that Sports Illustrated with him on the cover, because I still remember being the same age, because we were both graduating high school at the time, and he was in Miami. And I remember just bang, it was right away. He was so young. And then you had Ken Griffey Jr., and I was like, wow, this is going to be good. It was good.
He came up in 94, and he went 0-for-3 in his debut, and then he ended up, and he didn't come up till July of 94, and then he had a multi-hit game in the second game against the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. Not too shabby. He was one of those guys. I have one of those, what is it called? They're called four-sport cards. Do you remember those? They were college cards, baseball cards.
Mm-mm.
I have a four-sport card from 94. 93. And it's Drew Bledsoe, Alex Rodriguez, Chris Webber, and I think a hockey player that I've never heard of. I still have it. It's one of my favorite cards that I have.
It sounds like something you get out of the cereal box or something.
Well, they're all on one card.
Yeah.
And they're all in, Drew Bledsoe's in his Washington State uniform, Webber in his Michigan uniform, A-Rod's in his high school uniform. And I still have it in like one of the plastic sleeves somewhere at my house. I love that card, and it's worth absolutely nothing, because
that's the thing that sucks about our generation of cards. They mass produced all of them to the point where they're not worth anything really anymore.
I know.
That sucks. I wish it was like my, like, because I remember my dad having a bunch of cards and being like, oh, this one's worth $30. You go and you look at these things now.
Yeah, they overdid it. All those things are inflated.
20 cents. It's ridiculous.
I know. I got all the Upper Deck Junior cards. I'm sitting on them.
55305. I am too. Boxes upon boxes. My wife is so, she's like, what are we going to do with all these boxes?
Give them, you just keep handing them down. It's like heirlooms. Eventually, it'll be Honus Wagner by the time your kids get it.
Bennett will understand one day that, you know, his wife will complain at him for having these in his garage. And you know what? That's fine. Get off my back, lady. All right. Maybe that is a question that we can start off the P1 social with. It is your Q&A day. Debuts in sports, but you've got questions, we've got answers. Send us your questions on this Q&A day, 55305. First, Ryan with SportsCenter.
Down here, it's our time. It's our time down here.
Every morning at 6:30, Dusty and Cam want to hear from you.
Man to the coast, we get together, have a few laughs.
Text us at 55305. I'd love to berate you.
It's time for Dusty and Cam's P1 Social.
Want me to drive? No, I'll drive.
The time of the day where you drive the conversation.
Well, we're waiting.
Text us at 55305 and get social with us.
This is your time.
On 1080.
Now go out there and take it.
The Fan.
55305. That be the Fan text line. Q&A. Do it every Friday. You got questions. We've got answers. Send us your questions on the Fan text line. 55305. Deal. Jump starting this bad boy. Actually just coming in. Sports will return and life will go to get to normal. What sport in the future will you be watching and think, what am I doing? And actually turn off the TV. Because we're finding, you've talked about this. I think at some point we've all had this realization that, hey, life isn't that bad without sports on. Like last night flipped on the TV and it was like, I don't have to be watching anything. I still watch the 2006 national championship game, Texas USC, which was awesome to hear Keith Jackson and Dan Fouts do a game together again. But what is that sport that you're going to watch? You're going to flip on and be like, I don't need to do this. What am I doing? Why am I watching this?
I'm not one of those that has to obsessively watch sports all the time. I love watching SportsCenter if I need to, because it crams it all in. But sitting down, really, if I had to sit and watch one sport, it really is just football. I'm thinking of one, or golf. I apologize. Golf. Did I say golf? I meant to say golf. That's probably
about it. About what? That you have to watch?
That's the sport that if you told me if there was one left that I had to have to be able to watch it, be able to sit down, and that if it was going to go away forever, I'd have a small heart attack. It would probably be golf.
Oh, really? Because that's probably the one. That's the first one that popped into my mind as the one where if it's not a major and I'm just sitting there just to watch sports, I'm watching golf and it's just some tournament. That's probably the one I'd be like, what am I doing? Why don't I just go outside and start hitting balls with my kids, you know, instead, or go to the range or go to the putting green with my kids instead of watching this? Because, I mean, it's not one of those things that is exactly exciting, and there's not a lot of fanfare with it when you're just watching a normal tournament. Like, I don't know, what's the Ben Hogan or whatever. Probably not just going to tune that one in and watch it. But you get more out of it because you love the intricacies of the golf game.
There's an overwhelming amount of sports on TV. When we get back, positivity, when we get back to normal, there's going to be a lot of options. And it's going to feel like a flooding of options that you're going, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
But to Deal's question, I think it might not be as much about which sport will you like specifically say, I'm not going to watch this one as much anymore. I think it might just be an overall shift that we realize we can be just as engaged with plenty of other activities. And I think it may be sports across the board. We're going to be excited as all get up that they come back, and I'm still going to watch the hell out of all of them. But there are going to be plenty of times that we say, you know, I don't know if I need to watch this regular season game that isn't one of my teams or whatever.
Is there something that you're not going to take for granted anymore on the flip side of that and be like, hey, I'm not going to take this one for granted? Because for me, I look at it and I go, I'm not going to take for granted the possibility of going to a Blazer game anymore. You know, because there have been times where it's just like, yeah, no, I'm not going to go. It's just too much. I can just watch a regular season Blazer game at home or whatever. And, you know, obviously with the show and waking up early, that's a tough thing to do. But what I wouldn't give to be in an arena and feel the energy, or a stadium and feel the energy of a game again, because that's going to be the weird thing, is that when sports return, they're not going to have fans to start.
You feel like that, huh?
Well, that's what it kind of is feeling like when you hear Woj talk, and Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated was talking about this too, that every single possibility right now for the NBA to get back and resuming, not one of them includes the fans.
Well, the fastest way they can do it safely is with the fewest number of people. So it's not going to be with fans at first. It shouldn't be. I mean, I think that, and all the leagues want to get back to action so quickly that they're not willing to wait for it to be an all or nothing proposition.
And that was the most recent report of, that July 1 return for Major League Baseball. It was July 1 without fans in Major League Baseball. So I think that's one thing that, especially once we start seeing these games, especially like, can you imagine playoff basketball without the energy of a crowd?
I can't. I don't know how to even comprehend it, because I've never seen it before. It just reminds me of just practice.
What are you talking about? Practice?
Yeah, it's practice.
Yeah, that's
maybe they can pipe in some sounds or something.
You know, that is one thing that I've got Woj audios for later, and that is one thing that he said, is that they're gonna find a way to get the crowd involved, whether that is like, could you imagine watching the game and you have got a live stream of it up and then you hear live reaction from fans because like the mic on your computer is actually turned on and they aggregate it all together and just kind of make like,
you're blowing everybody's mind right now.
Well, that's one thing that's the option that he's saying.
Well,
that
are you going to put up screens everywhere or just have sounds of that? Oh, there's got to be something. Maybe somehow, some way.
But don't we all know how delayed that will be?
It would be. I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Dame
for three.
Dame hits a bucket, and then they run down the floor, and then you finally get the cheer on the other end when they miss a Mario Hezonja misses a corner three that's wide open, is when the crowd actually cheers.
I would bet you're going to let family in or a few people that have gone through the testing protocol. I don't know. There's got to be somebody in there. It's going to be that one guy in the corner just yelling. You got to let one heckler in. You have to.
That'll be bizarre.
Just one angry guy in the corner.
Do a lottery and give like 20 fans one section to themselves.
Exactly.
Well, you've got, my mouse isn't working over here.
Oh no.
Do you remember the guy who was heckling, Alan Crabb at the game?
Oh, damn!
You remember when the guy was just yelling and he was picked up by every microphone?
Well, what about
and
this guy?
It was in Memphis, and you had Alan Crabb had his hair, and the guy was just yelling, "Oh, damn!" the whole game.
Does Weber Stadium have a degree?
God, that guy is so drunk.
And I don't even know where it lives anymore, but
that's so rude to Weber.
It really is.
That's so rude.
You know what? I've heard it quite often. I've heard it quite often. It's like, oh.
Well, you went to Southern, so they do it to you all the time.
I went to a directional school. Mm-hmm. It's what is that?
Yeah, what do you do there?
Hey, it's the Harvard of the Rogue Valley, okay?
I don't even know where the Rogue Valley is, but I'll take your word for it.
Well, I mean, the only other competition that we have down there is Rogue Valley Community College.
Is Rogue Valley where the Rogue River is?
Sure is, Bob.
Sweet.
Does that make sense?
Way to go.
The river cut the valley?
Yep, from Grants Pass down to Ashland.
Pass. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I've done rafting on the Rogue.
It's a beautiful it's a beautiful trip down there. I recommend it.
Stick to Tiddlywinks and PlayStation. Mm-hmm. I'm not a terrorist. That's who I am. I'm a heckler.
God, I remember that guy. He was a wackadoodle. He was so Canadian, man.
That was the Canadian guy who's getting kicked out of youth hockey games for heckling.
Those Canadians are crazy. Those Canadians, man, they're nuts.
I love it.
I watched the documentary of the syrup and how maple syrup was a huge deal. They're all crazy. It's their gold up there. Maple syrup. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
You ever notice how expensive maple syrup is? Canadians control it all.
You've been watching Dirty Money then.
I did. I watched the Dirty Money one.
The Dirty Money on the syrup industry. The
syrup industry.
It's the syrup cartel in Canada.
Yeah, they call it they call it something. There's like
it's the reserve.
The reserve. They have an intermediary that's kind of, they have a forced middleman.
Yeah. So you know how we have like oil reserves where it's heavily guarded and protective worldwide? And it's essentially, they have a Fort Knox, and think of it like this, like the Royal Canadian Army or whatever it's called, they have a fortress.
The mounted police.
That is guarded, and it just holds barrels of maple syrup to control the price of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a big time commodity.
And they did a Dirty Money on how somebody stole it and they're bootlegging it. Ah, I love it.
I just want to grow some maple trees and make some syrup.
That's right. Not so fast, my friend.
I know.
All right, 55305. That is the fan text line. Q&A is coming in. We'll get to some more of your questions in. 55305. This is Dusty and Cam on the Fan.
Let's have an emerging maple syrup conglomerate.
Stupid. We don't know anything about maple syrup.
I happen to know everything there is to know about maple syrup. I love maple syrup. I love maple syrup on pancakes. I love it on pizza. I like to take maple syrup and put a little bit in my hair when I've had a rough week. What do you think holds it up, slick?
Oh, Wedding Crashers. Love it.
Good movie.
Just good?
It's a good movie. It's a good movie.
All right. I wonder how many of those, like, late 90s through the early 2000s, mid-2000s, I wonder how many of those movies will hold up, you know? Because a lot of the movies from the 80s, they still hold up. They're timeless. But
John Hughes?
I feel if we go, forward 10 more years, a lot of the movies from, like, late 90s to mid-aughts aren't going to hold up at all. At all. 55305, Q&A's. Would you rather have a 16-year career?
Oh, too early.
What?
Too early. That's at 8 o'clock.
Oh yeah. Wow. Oh, I didn't even catch that. Oh my gosh.
Come on, man. But too early.
How about we use this as a tease for 8 o'clock? We're not going to make Buck's easier.
Job easier. It's Buck's job is harder.
Would you rather have a 16-year career or play only 6 years with a championship or two? So would you rather be Robert Parrish or James Jones?
Six years and a couple championships. Was I league minimum for 6 years? Or was I the highest? Was I one of the top paid guys for 16?
What if we just go?
That's a good question.
What if you just say like you play for?
See, now there's a lot of caveats.
Yeah,
here.
That's why I want to say too many. What if you play league minimum for each of them? League minimum. You either league minimum for 16 years or you're league minimum for the six and you have the two championships.
Well, that's easy. Then you go championships. That's too easy.
Well, I think that would be more for the 16-year career because then you'd make sure you're well off and you're secure. But, I mean, look, league minimum these days, if you're smart with your money, man.
True that.
Yeah, two championships. Why do you play sports?
What professionally? To make money.
Well, no, why do you play sports? Like in general?
In general?
In general.
You exercise. Play to win the game.
You're exercise. Damn right, Herm.
Exercise.
Exercise.
I play pickleball for nothing but exercise and whooping up on people.
You know, it is funny though. Like you've got 3 kids. I've got 2. It is amazing. Like you don't have to preach winning. There's something that's ingrained in kids when they when you start competing, it's who won and who lost. And you don't like, even if you're not like, hey, doesn't matter. We're just working to get better. It is like, there's something inside of human beings that just sits there and goes, no, I want to win. And that's why we start playing. And that's why people.
Well, who likes to lose? Name that. You know what I do? I started my day wanting to lose today. I think, it's just who we are.
Yeah. That's human nature. So I'd rather win the championships. I'd rather get those.
But when you're out, here's my favorite line that a coach used to do. This is one of those, you know what? We're just here to play the game. No, I'm here to kick your butt. Sorry, I'm not here to play the game.
At what age is that acceptable to be?
At what age?
To start preaching that. Really? So you're saying like first grade basketball.
Yep. I'm there to compete. I'm not going to lie to these little, those kids don't even know the difference. They're stealing the ball. When we start telling them, back off, don't play hard, don't, and then it's just like, well, what am I doing here? It's not fair. And we trying to make, that's what happens. You're not fair. Just let them play.
I think there is.
We didn't have that. We didn't, no one did that. You just went out at recess and you played flies up and, the game that we can't say anymore. And then.
Hit the guy with the ball.
Get the person with the ball.
Yeah.
And then dodgeball. Dodgeball was the great equalizer.
Yeah. I understand the taking, calling off the dogs.
It's called a thinning the herd in dodgeball.
But one thing I can't stand is like T-ball leagues and like youth basketball leagues where they don't keep score.
Yeah.
Because
nobody's really keeping score. Liar. Parents are sitting in that. Just go, oh, it's 21-2.
There is a lesson to be learned in winning and losing. And I think that is one of the greatest things that sports, like nobody wants to lose, but you can always learn a lesson when you lose.
There's also, I've learned more as an athlete ever than when I lost and I won anything. Yeah. Always. But there's nothing that we do in competitive nature from business to board. Just play a board game with your family and let me know if you're there for fun. Yeah.
Take that L on the way out.
Are you there for fun?
Yeah, Mike Malone.
I mean, the Monopoly board might have got flipped a couple times. I'm just saying.
It's fair. Yeah. So that question, the 16-year or 6 years of two championships, this is a decent question along those lines. Whose career would you rather have, Dan Marino or Terrell Davis? That's a question.
What if
Terrell Davis?
Am I really Dan Marino living in Miami my entire time? Oh, please.
Or you Terrell Davis where you're a champion everything you ever wanted was that championship, and everybody's going to dictate your career based on the still one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play.
Yeah.
But guess what?
Sometimes we overvalue championships and don't appreciate just the run of it or what it is to be a great athlete, because you can't always control the team sports. If you're a tennis player or a golfer and you said, if this was a U.S. Open in both tennis or golf and you asked me would I golf for 20 years or golf 5 years and win a championship, I would always say 5 years and win a championship, because in golf it's an individual sport. In these team sports, it's almost like you would respect a guy more if he had a legacy of being a great teammate than a championship. Tony Gonzalez deals with this all the time. Charles Barkley probably deals with it all the time. These guys in team sports, the longevity of it, what it is, and to be known as one of the best teammates ever, I would credit that more than any ring and walking around being Big Shot Bob. I really would.
Okay. All right. Big Shot Bob. What a career he had, though.
Yeah, he's big shots.
How many teams in crucial situations forgot about Robert Horry?
Yeah.
Like, a crucial situation, like, how many times can that guy get lost in the corner? I don't know. We talk about hide-and-seek champion.
What's like Ray Allen? What do you know Ray Allen for?
Oh, Ray Allen.
One shot.
Oh, he got game? Is that what you're talking about?
Just in general, one shot.
Well, in the corner against the Spurs.
In the corner Spurs against the Spurs. If you define Ray Allen, Ray Allen was like, oh, he's really good.
You know what I remember good about that game?
Yeah. I love Ray Allen.
I remember all the great people shot that left the arena and tried to get back in.
Remember that? Yes. They locked the doors. They were banging on the doors.
You don't get back.
No.
It was like a Miami. It was a whiteout. They're all in their white t-shirts.
Yeah.
Like, quitters.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great side note in sports history. Like, all of those 30 for 30 shorts that they do is the people that left and wanted to get back in, but they locked them out. That's fantastic. All right, 55305. That is the fan text line. Q&As that are coming in here. Let's see here. They're getting a little flooded. Now I'm...
Well, just read, man. Just read.
Well, sometimes you got to edit on the fly.
Well, that was a would you rather for me last night in the club. Isaac hit me.
What was... Okay. Oh yes. I heard this. I was in the car when this came on.
I had to think about it for a second, and then I pondered the thought, and I went, well, voice text does allow everything. Mm-hmm. Voice activation is everything.
No.
So I don't know.
I'll save the would you rather
for Buck. I'll surprise Buck with it.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to give me would you rather today?
I'm going to give you one.
No, we're giving you one.
I'm giving you one. Okay. Actually, I'm going to give you two would you rathers today, ooh, Buckley, because you're a golfer, kind of.
Yeah,
and Dusty's a golfer, kind of. So I have two would you rathers that were presented to me last night by Mr. Isaac Ropp, and I'll present them to you at 8 o'clock.
I'm into this.
Here we go. Nah. We've got what sport And how far back would you go and say, I could go pro? I could play in the NBA in the 50s with Bob Cousy dribbling in front of me. That's one from Deal. I've always wondered that. Like,
sport could you go pro in?
This one's less for you.
We'll go back in the day?
Like, if time, because, I mean, you did go pro.
Bob Cousy would make you look ridiculous.
Could Dusty have played receiver in the 40s?
In the 40s when offensive linemen were 180 pounds?
Yeah.
That might be a little generous.
What, 180 pounds?
Yeah. They were at least 210, 215. They were a little bigger than 180.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like,
I'm totally guessing. I have no idea.
There are
like
some,
a big guy was 250 was a monster.
Yeah, he was like a freak of nature.
You aren't that big anymore.
My grandpa was under 200 pounds, and he played a backup O-line in Nebraska.
Yeah,
he's like 185 pounds as a guard.
They didn't even lift weights. Like, what is lifting weights?
Yeah, it's not even. I don't even know. Then the average offensive line was the average offensive line. Period.
Yeah.
In the 1940s, according to my quick Google search. Yeah. Was 6 foot and 1,221 pounds. That is the, 6. That's a weird separation here. 6 foot one, 221 was the average offensive lineman
size.
See,
that's not small. Not small at all.
221. What's the average offensive line now?
I would probably put the average offensive lineman from in the 290s. So, I would say maybe pretty close to 300.
What would Cam Newton play back then? He's 6'5", 250 now.
We've been a tackle. If you guys could go back and pick any sport to be a pro in and just know that you were going to be a pro, what would you pick?
Like, you had to be like between the 1930s and 1920 to 1950?
No, if you could just go, if at any point in time you said, I want to go back to the start and you knew you were going to go pro, what would you pick?
Baseball.
Absolutely baseball.
God, we all pick baseball.
Back in the day, it's baseball and it's not even close.
Yeah.
First love, playing out on the lawn until the sun goes down.
You can play forever.
Yeah. Yep. No doubt about it.
You can play 50 years, it feels like.
And like, playing, I mean, I understand how watching baseball can be monotonous, but being out there playing baseball every day, there's like there's like this family casual nature to it. It's a different animal.
Yeah. This is from Business Insider. In 1920, the average offensive lineman was 6 foot, 211. And then if you go forward through history, in the 1950s, the average offensive lineman was only 234 pounds.
It's still pretty big. Still pretty big guy.
Well, right now, the average offensive lineman is 310 pounds.
Okay.
6 foot five, 310.
310. So the evolution has gotten bigger?
In 100 years, they've grown 5 inches. The average player has grown 5 inches and gained 100 pounds in that position.
Yeah.
That's wild. All right, 55305. Get more of your Q&As
in. Gluten and HGH, that'll do it for you.
You're blaming. What a weird two things to bring together. Gluten and HGH. Combine them together, and that's the reason. That's the reason. And bigger people breeding with bigger people, too, huh? Do we give any credence to that? Maybe?
Probably.
Maybe a little bit. More of your Q&As coming up. And next hour, the reason why Andrew Whitworth wanted to go back to the Rams is quite staggering if you were to say this 6 years ago. Hot and Cool's next on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.